the Simon Wolf sign we're seeing from John.
That was my keyboard playing. The Simon Wolf is rawr.
Yeah, we have to remember, John, that most people listen to this on audio, and that's just meant absolutely nothing. So we are. If you want the delight of the Wolf Man, then you have to join us live and online, where you get a little bit of video. And today, much to my horror, John is in his robe. No, John, that's enough. Please stop. We don't want that.
If you want me to remain clothed, start sending money to whatever the new developers for poverty.
Yes. So welcome to iDeveloper Live, episode 17. I totally lost track. We did record an episode last week. However, it was so bad, we decided not to release it. We did think for a little while that we would release it as an episode of Core Intuition, but decided that wouldn't be very nice. So here we are. So, John, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I was working a little bit, giving some love to the Memory Miner web viewer, because I was trying to make it that it could play through by itself, because I've released a number of recent episodes, including the known one from NS Conference and a new one that's related to a blog post that we talked about last week, but no one other than who was there last week will ever hear about it. But it came along pretty well, and it gave me some more ideas. So that's what I was working on this past week.
Okay, so during the week, did you get a chance to catch up on the fact that Xcode 4.0.2 was released?
No, I didn't. But now that you've told me all about it, I should get off this podcast and immediately go download it.
I think you should. There's my phone ringing, so we're just going to stop that for a moment.
It sounds like more than a phone.
This is... actually, I broke my iPhone screen last week.
And that's why it's crackling like that?
Yeah, no, well, actually, let me just show the audience my iPhone screen from last week. Obviously, anyone on audio, you'll just have to pretend now you can see this great big thing. I sat on it, and that's what happened. So I bought some spares, and I mended it myself, and now it looks like this, which is...
That's after the repair?
That's after the repair. However, in doing it, something about the vibrate has gone from... No longer is it like a subtle vibrate on the phone. It's like an elephant is walking through the room and jumping up and down while wearing hobnail boots. Hmm. There's no way you could miss. If this vibrates in my pocket when I'm in a meeting, I lose valuable parts of my anatomy. Yes. So anyway, John, you've got me right. Xcode 4.02. Let's get back to actually something that people are interested in. It's an important update. In fact, we've got lined up, he couldn't come on this week, but hopefully lined up for next week, Mark Azzaro is coming on to tell us about all the things in Xcode 4 that were broken for core data, which now with 4.02 sort of might stand a chance of working. But it's back to this, it's a zero, a dot-dot update, a dot-dot release, and you're looking at a huge download. I mean, you have to download the whole thing again. Now, I know bandwidth's cheap and whatever else these days, but there's got to be a better way of doing it than that, isn't there?
I would think so, because how much could have possibly changed? One or two frameworks, the Xcode executable itself, clearly not worthy of a complete give me the whole world. You know, it would be interesting. They should have some type of in-app updating mechanism that's powered by RSS. I wonder how they might do that.
That might be really useful. Although, in fairness, the third-party in-app updating stuff that most of us use in our applications before the App Store came along, called Sparkle, did download the whole app again.
That's true. That is true. But when you download Xcode, I mean, that's the thing. It's like it's all the SDKs and all that other stuff, right? I mean, that's really where all this is coming from, no?
Yeah, I guess so. But you would have thought, actually, it would be great, because why not introduce some patching mechanism into the whole thing and then allow us as developers to use that as well, and be a great reason to start using the App Store is we get patching. Mm-hmm. You're not really listening to me, are you?
No, I am. but what I was going to, when I was ready, I was going to say something else about Xcode 4, but that's unrelated to Xcode 4, but related to Cappuccino and Xcode 4.
So what is it about XK4 and Cappuccino? You can
well, you might remember that from a couple of weeks back when we were talking about Xcode 4, and I was saying that I hadn't really been using it all that much, because there were some things that were a little bit tricky with it, but the other main reason is that you couldn't use it with Cappuccino because of the way that they've integrated Interface Builder. Well, the good folks, Francisco Tomalski and some other folks related to Cappuccino, have released a nascent tool which helps you. It's basically, it looks like it's a command line application that will go through your Cappuccino project and then programmatically generate the interfaces for you, so that's compatible with Xcode 4. So that it seems like yet more effort is being made to make Xcode be the preferred development tool for it. And I thought that was very nice. So now I might actually want to be using Xcode 4.
So you've not really moved into it yet. You're still, there's a lot of people, I mean, often when a new version of Xcode comes out, loads of people do it, but I've been, there's a lot of people who are still on Xcode 3 at the moment.
Well, I mean, for a consulting project I was working on, I'm still using it, Xcode 3.
Well, let's see. It says have just to ask of the chat room. Just put a 4 in the chat room or a 3 in the chat room on which one you're using as your main tool. I'm assuming most people have got it installed and do it, but which one you're using for your day-to-day? Oh, okay, so Uli says 3 at work and 4 at home, so maybe that's a good thing. So 4, and Tyler's 4, Graham Lee's 4. Well, maybe the 3 people who've decided to answer are all on 4, so that's the whole thing. Yeah, now, have you tried app code?
No.
I did download AppCode.
And you liked it?
I don't know if I stayed in there long enough to make that decision. It just felt wrong. I didn't get any chance to really play with it and see, but it just didn't look right. And yeah, as a developer, it should be about, does it do stuff and feel right, but I just couldn't get past that this doesn't look like a Mac application. And it's not, yeah. Well, it is a Mac, it's written in Java, is my understanding. It didn't look gross. It wasn't like, you know, I didn't have to vomit before using it, but it just didn't, yeah. I don't know. Have you seen it?
No, actually, I haven't looked at it yet.
Okay. So here is app code for those who want to see it.
It looks swingalicious.
It doesn't look that horrible, but it does look like a Java application to me.
The telltale is when you like resize windows or views.
So, I mean, is anybody in the chat room using AppCode or tried AppCode at all? I'd be interested to know if anybody is actually using it at all.
So, nope, not using it, not trying it. Crickets. Nobody's likes it.
Okay, that's good. So,
No. Graham Lee says he's been using it on and off, and we want to know why. Why, Graham? Why would you be using it?
This doesn't really work with audio, does it, when they're in the chat room?
And this, no, it doesn't.
So we're going to give the chat room just a chance to although with that said, my chat room isn't working. So it's, like someone said in the chat room, it doesn't matter how bad a day I've had, you know Scotty is going to have a worse one. So there we are.
Well, that's a reasonable answer. So Graham says he'd like to see whether it has features, better features than Xcode, because Xcode really needs some competition.
That's true. So should we as developers be hoping that this succeeds in order that keeps Apple on their toes? Or are Apple at the stage with development that actually they don't really give a stuff about what anybody else does as a tool? They know they've got it sewn up. And, Apple can see products like Eclipse. They can see products like Visual Studio on Windows. They know what features other development tools have, and they choose whether to develop them or not. So do we actually think just by the fact that someone is actually bothered to do one for Objective-C is going to make any difference at all to what Apple does?
Well, I don't know. The consensus in the chat room is they'd like to feel that's the case, but they're not convinced that that's what the reality will be. I think in general, it's always nice to have a little bit of competition. But to be also honest, I don't really have a whole lot of experience with other IDs, not deep enough for that I could have a reasonable opinion. I mean, I've looked at Eclipse, and I've looked at the Visual Studio that Microsoft puts out, and I've never been so disappointed with Xcode, or I wasn't even that disappointed with Project Builder, believe it or not. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I was using it to more simple degrees. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's the issue that I've just commented on in the chat room, that if you want Xcode to have a viable competition, someone's got to use it. So who's actually prepared to use it?
Not I.
So, I mean, this is being released as a commercial product. It's not being done out of freedom. Or do you think actually maybe if you are a JetBrains Java developer, or maybe you use JetBrains Rails development environment, and you're looking to become an iOS developer or a Mac developer, that maybe this will give you familiarity and that's the type of market they're looking for?
I think that sounds like a much more reasonable explanation, because if you already are an Xcode user, you can whine all you want about it, but it's a pretty high bar to cross. But there are plenty of other people who have muscle memory in other IDEs, so I would say that must be what they're looking at. Or maybe that there's one, in the case of AppCode, wasn't it that they said, here's a couple of things that we do, but it is Xcode, project file compatible, or am I remembering something else?
No, it opens Xcode. In fact, I think you have to have Xcode installed to use it, because it uses the Xcode build system behind the scenes, if I remember rightly. Mm-hmm. So you can't not have Xcode. You still have to download the developer tools from Apple and install them. You still need that 6 gig download before you download, what they might advertise as a lightweight IDE. I don't know. I'm just... I remember when I came to Xcode, first of all, I was a Windows developer and I've been looking, using Visual Studio. And Visual Studio is one of these IDEs that, has, loads and loads and loads of stuff in it. And when you first moved to Xcode, it just seemed sparse. Yeah. It was so sparse, and it was like, where are all the features? But actually... it took me a while and lots of bitching and lots of moaning, but after a while it became, I wasn't really using those features that much anyway. The features that Xcode is implementing are quite good. I mean, I came during Xcode 2, I think it was, when I first came along. I mean, and to be honest, the editor, the code editor in Xcode 2 was just rubbish. Absolutely rubbish compared to Visual Studio. I still actually think the code editor in Xcode has still got quite a long way to go. As just a pure code editor, I don't feel it's the best editor around. However, as the code completion integration gets better, it gets harder and harder to justify not just using Xcode, because to integrate with something else just seems too much work for too little gain. So it's getting there.
That's funny that's an interesting perspective, because I always wondered about that myself. Well, what was it that they were complaining about? So when you say, were the features relating to editing, or were they all the kind of peripheral things for, I don't know, building your project or managing the UI creation, right? I mean, how do people in other platforms, what is like Interface Builder for other platforms? They're not something that archive objects. They make, a declarative file of some sort that then and stub code, right?
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's little things like being able to move around the code with keystrokes nice and easily. Some really quite elegant code folding. Some features just like Copilot that became a plugin for right. Xcode from the Macroscope guys. They were just in there in the editor, and it just meant it just felt competent. Yeah, you could do things visually, add icons that appear to do the right things. A lot of the stuff that we have now, such as during the debugging stuff, was around years ago in Visual Studio. The stuff like it just highlights variables, shows you their values as you're going through, if you hover over them, that sort of thing. Just little things that, in fairness, Xcode has caught up a lot since those days. But when I first came to it, it was like, yeah, well, okay, this is like using Notepad.
Hmm. Wow, that's pretty harsh. Wow.
Yeah, it was, but I'm a harsh man, John. That's the way it is. And we've lost the chat to the live audience again because it's all crashed again. Right, okay, folks on the live stream, we're very sorry. This is just blowing out today. I don't know if it was coincidence, but the first time the stream went was when I started AppCode, and the second time the stream went was when I stopped AppCode.
Garbage collection.
Ustream is using something. It's using Flash. I don't know if it's using Java in there as well. So I will not be starting any third-party development tools up during a show again, and we'll see. Now, that's all I can say. Now, if someone does want to place their advert just here, okay, that might mean we can afford better streaming software and streaming stuff. We are trying to move to set up a QuickTime server and get something out there in the cloud and do our own streaming, because as nice as these free things are, and let's be honest, Ustream's free, and so actually got no right to bitch about it at all. And I'm sure if I lived in a one of these high bandwidth areas where I could guarantee 25 meg up all the time, it would be fine. But here with my two pieces of string and three snails to carry the data up and down, so we're going to be looking at doing our own live streaming ourselves, and get ready. Because actually, you think this is a problem, John. We're thinking of possibly streaming the conference next year as well.
Really?
But not at this rate. And
not with the bandwidth that you have there in what was the name of that? Mortimer. Wait, make sure you put the label towards the camera if you're going to take a swift streak.
All right.
Come on, do it right. There we go. He looks so refreshed when you take a drink of Coca-Cola.
Ooh, this Coca-Cola is so refreshing, John.
I think that if you were to actually spill it on your computer, you might have a better success with Ustream.
Do you know what, John? We didn't put last week's episode out because we thought it was so bad. I'm not quite sure we've done any better this
I thought, did you actually listen to it? I was listening to it. I thought there were some amusing bits in it.
But. Yeah, there were some amusing bits in it. Okay, right. But last week when we did the show that never went out, we were talking a little bit about tech support. So just remind us what we were talking about, John, and then we'll see if said person responded.
Okay, well, I was saying that when I stopped off in London to see my mom, I saw her struggling mightily with the software used to pull photos off of her flip camera.
And now defunct flip camera because they're being stopped.
Well, exactly. So, and my mom was all upset about it, as are a number of other people. So, anyway, so I bought the software, but like I do to support my fellow indie developers, and I was there with a small amount of time to be able to get the software, get the license code, and it never arrived. And I said, well, it's okay, it still runs for a while. And then I followed up by sending an email to the developer of this application at the beginning of the show, and we said on air that we wanted to know whether this person who was known for his quick turnaround was going to be able to maintain his reputation. And I'm happy to report that in fact Manton did maintain his reputation for super fast turnaround, and told me that the problem was in this particular case is that since I had bought a copy of it before, it thought, well, I don't need to send the license code again, not realizing that I was dutifully buying a copy of software for someone else. So, anyway.
Ah, right. So, was that you help him discover a bug in his licensing system then?
I did, indeed.
There we are. But he responded within the required amount of time that he promised on that other podcast whose name we will not mention.
Yes, the Unmentionables.
Yes. Well, that's good. Well done, Manton. Please, what was the name of the project again? Give him a bit of a plug.
Clipstream.
Clipstart.
Clipstart, sorry.
That's why I didn't even Ustream, buy it. And I know Clipstart. The name of his software.
Yeah, Clipstart, there we go.
And Manton, if you really want, you could have your ad here as well, if you wish to sponsor our show.
You know, I'm just having a blast just taking screen grabs of the ads that appear up this. Because right now, at least what I'm seeing is that there's a display ad saying "you like animals" underneath there. So I could, it's just too funny. I have to send this to you.
That's good. Right. So conferences, John. We just mentioned NS Conference, which obviously you were at at this time. There seems to be, especially in the second half of the year, the September to November, so many conferences coming up. Now, last year that was just in the USA. I think there were six OS X or iOS conferences between about September and December in the US last year, and this year I think many of those are planned to run again. We've had two spring up in the UK for. September, the iOS Dev UK in Aberystwyth in early September. If you just search iOS Dev UK in Google, you'll find that. And then there's the Update Conference, which is actually on the same dates in Brighton. We spoke about one last week, and I can't remember its name, but it was in Melbourne, Australia, at the same time in September. I think it's good that there are. A number of conferences coming out. If you think about when I first came to the Mac as a developer in only 2006, which isn't very long ago, there was nothing. There were a few websites, which are still very popular websites, Cocoa Dev Central, etc., and Cocoa Dev. But other than that, in WWDC, there was nothing there. And this is only sort of 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, that's the whole reason I started the Late Night Cocoa podcast, is because there was nothing. And now we're here and we're looking at maybe 10, 12 conferences a year around the place. Are we going to get to the point where actually there's so many of these things that they become unviable and we're going to end up with the risk losing them all again?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that anybody who's worked on a conference is not doing it for the money. So I think it's more an expression of the more distributed fan base. Fan base is probably not the right word, but we did talk about it last week about the various scenes. Having grown up, been a big fan of different music magazines or self-produced zines from the hardcore punk era, which I think you lived through as well. They would always report saying, what concerts, who's playing, who's sleeping on somebody's couch to make the concert possible. And it was always interesting to me. And I think that the fact that there are all these little mini conferences just means that people are realizing that there's an important aspect of community, that you don't get at WWDC that people want. So I guess that the nature of these, I don't know if you want to call them secondary conferences, will change a little bit more from, we're not trying to teach you anything new per se or give you new information about new API or that type of thing, which really only Apple can do, but we are going to put together a day or two or whatever when people can get together and work collaboratively. Everybody can become a teacher for somebody else. And I don't see any reason why that couldn't continue. No. But I also think that the economics have to be that it's going to be very much kind of along the unconference thing. It's like you find somebody to give you a cheap space, you put it together. It's kind of, it's not good. I don't think there's going to be room for that many NS conference style, properly produced conferences.
Yeah, I guess there's. In the days of the first, especially of iOS, when the conferences started to come along, people were hungry that they would, they would travel to a different continent to get to a conference. I guess maybe here in the UK, we're not used to it the same way as you are in the US, but I guess conferences could become quite regional, that you might have East Coast and West Coast, North, mm-hmm. South conferences, and that doesn't necessarily mean anything other than, people don't have to travel so far.
Yeah.
It's when I was in the Windows world as a developer, I was a conference speaker there, and there were a lot of conferences around the world, and I used to speak at a lot of different conferences. But for myself going to them, what you soon realized was actually every conference was the same set of speakers, and in fact, for many of us, you'd sort of You prepare three or four talks at the beginning of a year or beginning of the conference season or whatever it might be, and then you just go around the world giving them. And that was where you prepare them. In some ways, that was good, because if you were going to give a talk four or five times, you would sort of maybe put more time into it than if you were just turning up to do one conference talk. But it's sort of just many of the times the conferences, no matter though they a lot of them had a good atmosphere, it was a case of, here's a bunch of guys who've done this talk 100 times, doing it again. Yeah, it's informative. And I don't actually know if with the internet and video and all the rest of it, we need that. I think it's maybe far more about being a little bit seat of the pants, a little bit more left field and trying to, do some other stuff, as opposed to, ending up with this speaker circuit effectively for conferences, which is always a danger of getting.
It's this kind of traveling sideshow? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
So are you, so back from your Windows days, would you say that you played the role of the bearded lady, or, what circus sideshow would you most represent?
Yeah, I think I was just the fat man.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, I actually have thought about this a little bit, that even here in San Francisco with not only is this where WWDC has, but, I think NS Coder is extremely strong here. And in particular, there's an NS Coder which is held in Campbell, where a number of Apple engineers live in that area. And so if you have a pressing problem, I've been down there a couple of times, and it's almost like having a little mini WWDC lab. But I keep going back to the fun social aspect of it. And I was actually talking with my neighbor who's a big fan of this thing called Dorkbot. Dorkbot is this kind of robotics group here in San Francisco. People get together. It's a type of show and tell. It's like, look at these crazy things I can do with some controller circuitry and this hardware. And they've been going for a while. There's a similar one for EFF. So there are a lot of little, half social events, half show and tell type things. And I in many ways, I think that's the future. Something that is a little bit more formal than the, put down on your calendar, every Tuesday we're going to meet at this cafe. So something that actually has some planning and put into it, but it's a little bit more, tightly focused and planned. And even for this thing, in all honesty, I was thinking that it would be kind of interesting to be able to have people say, here's a particular problem I'm working on right now. I need help from the community, and have them, through the magic of all this great technology, appear as a guest and state their problem and see if people in the community can't give them a little help, because there's obviously lots of talent available here in the people that regularly show up on the chat rooms and the guests that we have. And I think that would be a kind of interesting thing, so that you don't have to wait 6 months for a year, for the conference to roll around, arrive in your city, or for you to go to the big daddy ones.
Mm. There's a lot of talk in the chat room going on about would a WWDC Europe be good? In other words, if WWDC in the States sells out so quickly, would we do one over here? But I think actually the best point I can see someone making there is, we've talked about the value of WWDC as the labs.
Yeah,
that means Apple would be looking to shift 1,000 engineers over here if they really wanted to, create a proper WWDC. And then I think, Ian or Uli, Ian, Graham or Uli are pointing out, that's another month when the developers from Apple are not developing anything.
Yeah, I would think of nothing else. I would imagine Keyman Insurance would make it impossible for them to shift so many engineers on together on flights. I mean, I read somewhere that there are only two people in the world who know the secret formula to Coke. Here's what it is. It's sugar and water and a little bit of dye. But anyway, those two people are not allowed to be on the same plane at the same time. And wouldn't you imagine, in all honesty, there is key man insurance for large companies. And I doubt you could have, too many top executives, engineering executives, or even engineering managers or top engineers on one plane at one time.
Yeah. I mean, you probably don't want to charter a 747 and stick the entire Apple development team on it.
Yeah, it would be a bad Buddy Holly story.
Right, so if you want to check out some of those conferences, it's good. We'd love your feedback on conferences and what you think they're good about. I mean, obviously, If they're selling out, that's good. I don't know. Are they all selling out? There is a danger that some people start doing it for money whenever anything gets popular. I mean, you only have to look at the book market. When suddenly iOS got popular, how many books started appearing, and immediately, that's a good thing in a way. But immediately it was quite obvious that the quality of those books wasn't necessarily as good as it could have been in many areas, because now it was like, oh, this is popular, we've got to get out the door. Whereas in the past, if someone was writing a book about iOS or OS X particularly, or Cocoa, it was a labor of love, because you knew you were never going to get rich from it. So, and the publisher would probably have to be persuaded to do it. And so they tended to be at least of a certain quality upwards, which I'm afraid in the rush to the bottom, the market can be a little bit more like the Windows book market now, where some of them are absolutely flaming awful. To be perfectly blunt, not going to mention any names because I wouldn't remember their names anyway. Okay, this has been a bit of a waffly episode about stuff. Memory Miner and the Mac App Store, how's it going?
Glad you bring that up. Speaking of problems, so I have this problem that I'm unable to resolve. So somebody help me here. In order to sell a product on the App Store, you need to be able to sign a contract. And the contract documents that I have here have the wrong person name. And it has this oddball name. And I have now tried everything I can think of solving the problem. I mean, I originally went through and said, how do I resolve this? And they said, send email to this address, which I did. And then, 10 days later, I got an autoresponder, but actually had somebody's name on it, and said, yes, we're looking into it. And then I replied, thank you. And then I, still nothing. I wrote back again, referencing that, never heard anything. I used a kind of an old developer advocate contact who had contacted me, on his own when Memory Miner was released, saying, hey, I'm here to help developers like you. Can I ever help you? And never heard back from him. So at this point, I really don't know what to do. I cannot, unless I decide I want to put it out for free, I'm a little bit hosed here. So
that's because the contract attached to your iTunes developer account is got the wrong name on, you see.
Yes. So it's really not a valid legal document. And even so, I wouldn't be able to do it because they tie the banking information to the thing. So, and I don't know. I mean, so I'm really at wit's end here.
Right. So, that's a difficult one, because, I mean, you can't really just – you could just create a new developer account, but then you would lose the memory – I'm assuming you've got Memory Miner registered as an application name.
Yeah, I really can't do that.
And you'd lose it. Yeah, I tried some tests with some application names the other day, and I'd sort of come to the conclusion after doing a few things that I might just be able to get rid of this name, and as long as I didn't have a bundle ID, recreate it again. And then I did it, and I can't. So the application name I'd registered, I've now lost. Fortunately, I mean, for me, that was an application I was trying to go forward on, and, I can just maybe think of a new name for it now because it's a new product. But someone like you don't want to lose Memory Miner.
No, it's kind of important to me. So I don't know. I mean, this point, I have some other Apple contents. I hate having to do it, but at this point, I don't know what else to do. I mean, I know a couple of people work at Apple, and at my only guess is to be able to say, okay, can somebody walk over to building X and tap somebody on the shoulder and say, what the fuck?
Uli is suggesting, what about a DTS incident?
Well, I don't. That's an interesting thing, but I don't have them anymore because I used to be Apple Developer Select, and I ended up with so many DTS incidents, which it was such a sometimes it worked well, sometimes you would get no answer for it, so I stopped buying them, and so now the $99 minimum registration doesn't get you any DTS incidents. I guess I could try buying one, but I don't know whether that would. I don't think any of those people have the power to be able to do it. I mean, somebody has to be able to go in and look at my account and make a change in that. I think that's a very small number of people, and I get why. But at this point, I don't. It's not like there's a phone number. I don't know, unless I'm unaware of something. It's only you can send email either to directly to a named person or to one of the ADC problems or ADC this, or I forgot the email address, was it?
Okay, the chat room is suggesting that you do get some DTS incidents in your $99 account. I'm just repeating what the chat room is saying. I don't know if that's true. Okay, if anyone from Apple is listening to this, and you know, we're not asking you to solve it, we're just asking you to tell John who he needs to speak to solve it, who he needs to email. So this name just appeared on the contract. It was not a name you typed in. You weren't having a funny 5 minutes and you decided your name was Luigi Antonio Foxtonman.
No, it's a weird thing. It's John Hapgood. Now, somebody was telling me, I think it was Graham, it's like, there is
not John Hapless.
Exactly. there is another developer with that name. I thought, okay, that you know, what's frightening for me is you know, if that's the case and there's some little, you know, mixing and matching of things, that would not be very good. But I have no idea. So,
well, there we are. That's
but I will keep doing it. But I think at this point it's time to as somebody else suggested, is to be able to I once had my sister's name on my ADC account because I'd ordered from iTunes with my sister's credit card.
Now, have you been using John Hapman's credit card again, John?
No, I haven't. But that is another reasonable explanation, because years ago, with a colleague of mine, I had sent him a computer that I'd bought with the hardware discounts, which is totally a kosher thing to do. You can buy things for people in your company. And that's the other thing that it seems possible. But then why would they, you know, pick one from column A and one from column B? If it had been his name, then that might have made sense. But to have his last name, my first name, and my address, it seems like they just kind of mixed the whole thing up.
So if you go into your developer, someone's saying here on air, if you go into your developer profile, does it have your name?
It does. And that's the thing. So it has my name. It's in the generated contracts. You pull down the contract and it's drawn. It you know, it's a type of mail, you know, a merge document. And so that's what's so strange about it. So
that's weird, because they're obviously getting that information from somewhere else.
Right.
So that's a bug in their system.
Well, I think that is. So I don't know. And I would say that they are not responding to bugs or problems with their, you know, client management and ordering systems with anywhere near the speed that Manton Reese has set as the standard.
So if it's a bug, could you file a radar?
I could do that.
At least that means someone might see it and pass it on.
Yeah.
There we are. Anyway, there we are. We've moved into that. So here, I asked you about Memory Miner. So Memory Miner for the App Store is all ready to go if you're prepared to change your name to John Hapgood.
Pretty much, yeah.
There we are. So there we are. But actually, that might be cheaper to change your name.
That would be the Eric Schmidt solution.
just change your name by whatever process is available in the US so that you can get the contract signed, and then you can change it back again afterwards, and all will be legal and all will be fine, and it'll be a few hundred bucks on a solicitor, and you don't have to deal with Apple technical support.
There's the perfect idea. But no. But so then on that point, I mean, part of the, you know, I obviously want to be on the App Store, but for all the same reasons, my what I've heard from people is that, you know, the big sales bump that everybody enjoyed for a little bit has kind of like gone down, and it's you know, I wouldn't say it dropped off the radar, but it seems like the initial demand for and the initial interest among people who were able to download and get the update is done, and people aren't generally expecting huge sales again until Lion is released, and it really is there for everybody who's getting these machines.
Well, I think we learned something recently. I mean, I was speaking to several developers over the last few months who have had apps in the top 10 in the App Store, mm-hmm. and they were saying, you know, if the number of sales I was getting puts me in the top 10, that suggests that sales are quite low. And then this week, just in the past week, Acorn from Flying Meat, Gus Muller, has been released. Acorn 3, fantastic application. Go check it out. Go download it. I think it's $19 for an upgrade, is it? And maybe $30 new, something like that. Flyingmeat.com, go check it out. Now, he got Fireballed through Dario Fireball. Mm-hmm. And he was in there, and his application was you know, up there in the ranks amongst Pages and Numbers and Apple's own applications. He was right up there in the top 10 with those. Now, okay, it's quite a popular tool. I know a lot of people on Twitter were downloading it straight away, and I'm sure he sold a ton of them. But if you can sell enough to start beating Apple's own programs, even if you get some really, really good sales, which I hope Gus did because he deserves it, you know, that is still suggesting the numbers are quite low. To me,
I'm willing to feel the same. And the other thing too is my other, you know, interest in doing this is the ADA awards. You know, you have to be on the App Store to even be considered. And the odd thing is that this year the deadline is like May 23rd, I think, which seems like an incredibly short amount of time in comparison to last year's. You know, and it's kind of funny to me. I mean, I think I don't know how many apps are on the App Store now, the Mac App Store, but I don't think it's all that many. I mean, is it 2,000 or so? I mean, it's considerably less than the iOS App Store, obviously. And I think in that particular thing, they're just going to do, I think, a much more, I don't know, I shouldn't, you know, put words or thoughts in their mind, but it was surprising to me that you had that much time before actual WWDC.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Mac App Store will become the main way people buy apps, especially after Lion, and it will be touted as one of the big features of Lion when it's released. But my surprise about the 21st of May for the ADAs is, you know, how are they seriously going to look at all those apps and make a judgment in what have they got, 2 weeks?
Well, exactly.
I mean, it's going to be fire it up. Oh, that looks all right. Let's have a look. Or, you know, your app, if it doesn't impress the moment it's opened, you're not going to get past phase one, are you?
I would guess not. And so, I mean, you know, to be all honest, you know, my strategy, such as it is, my only thing is to be able to say, you know, it's I did notice that there's a section on the App Store that says here are apps that work better together with their iOS counterpart. So, you know, my thinking was is that the combination of Memory Miner for Mac, iOS, and web, all of which work together, and particularly the web stuff. I mean, there's some things that Safari does in terms of the speed of animation, which is stunning to me. It really is. And you'd ask me what I've been working on. You know, I was able to have, you know, what looks like a complete end-to-end, almost like movie. You know, the smooth pan and zoom from one to the other, transition to the next, that works flawlessly. I mean, honestly, on Safari, it's the equivalent performance as Desktop Memory Miner, which is not surprising because ultimately it's using the same GPU accelerated core animation stuff. And you just don't get anywhere near that, you know, certainly not with Chrome, which is, yes, it's WebKit, but that's the HTML parsing. It's not the actual rendering. And even compared to the Firefox 4, which they kept saying, it's like, oh, we've got GPU acceleration for this stuff. And certain types of things are perfectly fast, but not panning, you know, not manipulations with relatively large bitmap images. So anyway, it's the whole thing is starting to get me a little bit frustrated.
Well, I look forward to hearing that you've got it all solved next week, John, and that Memory Miner is in review and it's ready to go, and everything's done, and it's in the top 10, and it's all lined up for an ADA, and then someone's going to buy it off you for $10 million, and you're going to give half to me, and there we are.
Okay. Okay. Well, it looks like Uli just got linked, but he just got linked by Grouper, and hopefully he, if it's a blog, he's got it well cached.
Hope so. As many people have discovered, you know, that was an interesting discussion. It's not that probably necessary for this show. What was it on the Build and Analyze podcast? Marco Arment, if you don't, from the 5x5 Studios, Dan Benjamin. If you like podcasts and you haven't got enough in your repertoire that you listen to, then I can recommend you go listen to that. It's a vaguely developer podcast. In fact, its content is very similar to what we've just spoken about today. It's stuff surrounding development as opposed to what's the word I'm after, John? Tech stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, which people keep asking for. We tech stuff coming back next time, folks. Did I say Marco Zara coming on to talk about the core data problems in Xcode 4, just so people are aware of those. And we are lining more tech guests up. The Coco Fusion guys from Moneywell, they're trying to get Moneywell 2 out, so they'll be back in about 2017. we love you guys. See you soon. there we are. Anyway, that's Build and Analyze. One of my advertisers, someone else's podcast, 5x5, Dan Benjamin, Marco Arment. Marco was the Instapaper. He does Instapaper. And he was one of the co-developers of Tumblr. And of course, we must do our friends Daniel Jelkut and Manton Reese with their Core Intuition podcast as well. There you go. Those are the three. iDeveloper Live, Build and Analyze. And there's some more out there. Ennis Brief. Now I'm getting into trouble because I'll miss someone out. Ennis Brief from Sawmorrow, that's good as well. Anyway, John, we probably ought to finish, hadn't we? Because it has been quite a lot of waffle today. Although, apart from our feed problems, I think we remained reasonably under control, didn't we?
Yes.
Well, there we are. That's enough to say.
Well, Scotty, so if people have not had enough of you, where might they find your writings or you know,
well, I don't write musings? I don't write, John, because I'm still learning how to do that. However, people can follow me on Twitter at MacDevNet, or they can follow iDeveloper TV if they want to know more about this show and our video offerings. You can check out my product offerings at iDeveloper.tv, where there's a we got. Yeah, the studio is so busy over the next few months. We have so many courses that we're about to film and release. The Ennis conference video should be out very shortly. Hopefully, maybe even by the time you next hear us on air, they should be out, or if not, very shortly after that. So we're really busy around here. And I'm actually doing some coding as well, so life is full. And what about you, John?
Well, you can always read about my product at memoryminer.com. And if you go to memoryminer.com/blog, you'll see a blog post. It's one that I haven't been blogging very often, but now I have a new one. And I will take this opportunity to say I invite you people to read it because it's asking for participation from people. I'm doing a Memory Miner collection about the experience of taking public transit in different parts of the world. And I've gotten very good response, actually. You know, none other than Mike Lee sent me a huge collection of stuff from his recent year of travel. So all those people who have some public transit experience, which it would include you, Scotty, you know, what does the public transit in East Bullockshire look like? What do you hear? What does it sound like? What advertisements or signs do you see? It would be interesting.
We have no public transport really, John. We can go to the neighboring town 2 or 3 times a day, maybe, if we're lucky. Better than that, but we're in a small enough place that we walk everywhere.
Well, that's my whole point. So, the public transit thing was kind of interesting because you put all these people crowded together, and you know it's a somewhat uncomfortable situation because it's loud and you're trying to avoid eye contact, and that's why you have captive advertising, and that's what I always find so interesting to be able to make the comparison, and it can be rather amusing in the same way of watching the ads that appear under you while you're on Ustream. Is incredibly amusing. So anyway,
there we are. What's up? Right. Well, John, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I have no idea whether people have found what we're talking about today interesting or not, but I've really enjoyed spending another hour with you. We're sorry about the feed problems. We are trying to do what we can with it, but either I've got to move town in order to make this work, or find a better way of doing it. And I really don't want to move town. So just bear with us. Hopefully, if you've been listening to this on the iTunes podcast, then we've managed to edit out all the feed problems and you have had a slick and profitable time with us for the last however many minutes are left, 7 minutes, once we get rid of all the problems. To the chat room, you are stunning stars of you know, the podcast world. You are the most amazing people. It's the same people in the chat room every week, and they're always prepared to talk. They're always prepared to tell us how crap we're doing, and when it's going wrong, and everything like that. So all you guys out there, really thank you for tuning in. Please keep doing your stuff in there. And yes, we're going to blame AppCode and we're going to blame Java for all the problems we've had tonight. But please, JetBrains, don't sue me because we can't prove it. All right, until next time, to everyone out there, you take care. Thank you.